And welcome back in Game Day, sportsradio.com, Inside the Numbers, joined by Mike Bernard from OTM Sports out in Las Vegas. He's in the GameDaySportsRadio.com studios there in the desert. Want to remind everyone that Mike's appearance here on Inside the Numbers brought to you by State Farm Insurance, Auto, Home, Property, and Life, and many other products that State Farm Insurance offers. State Farm here to help life go right. And if you're in the Birmingham, Alabama market, go by and see Larry McIntosh in Pelham. And you can call him at 205-663-3119. Larry and his staff ready to serve you there in the Birmingham, Alabama market. State Farm Insurance here to help life go right. Mike, let's move on to the NFL games. We've covered all the college games in the previous segment. Let's talk about one of the early games on Sunday. That's going to be Carolina and Atlanta. Falcons, they're coming off a loss at Philly in week one. Panthers beat Dallas 16-8 in their home opener.
Yeah, Coach, the Falcons lost, the Cowboys lost, and the betting public lost. So most tickets were on Atlanta and Dallas in those week one games, and they all lost.
Let's look at some roster moves that the Falcons have made. Atlanta moved running back Brian Hill up from the practice squad to the 53-man roster. The Falcons have been emphatic that Devontae Freeman is good to go versus the Panthers, but with this roster movement, it seems Freeman's knee injury, suffered against the Eagles just after six carries, may be more serious than originally thought. Or maybe the Falcons are just making the move in case Freeman tweaks it again this week, sort of like an insurance policy. NFL teams think that week in, week out, if you can rush for 150 yards, you'll win. Carolina rushed for 147 last week in their 16-8 win over the Cowboys. But the problem is that the Panthers' leading rusher was also their quarterback, Cam Newton. No matter how great of an athlete you are, and Newton is definitely a great athlete, elite NFL teams, they don't have their quarterback as the leading rusher.
No, they don't. And look, we saw the red zone read become very popular trend about 5 years ago. Remember that, Coach?
Right.
We had RG3, Russell Wilson. They had a lot of success. Some other quarterbacks in the league were doing it as well. They started getting lit up. I believe RG3 had his knee blown out, had concussions. They started getting lit up by opposing linebackers and safeties. Now, Cam's a big, strong guy, but I agree. They can't have him take those hits every week. One thing about the Panther game I did like seeing, and I know he had a turnover, but I did like seeing Christian McCaffrey getting 19 touches because with his speed and quickness, he puts pressure on the defense.
He does. Both of these teams, they've got to find a way to score some points. The Panthers, of course, only got 16 in their win last week. And McCaffrey and receivers Jarris Wright, they both lost fumbles. Now, Atlanta's 12 points were punctuated by their inability to produce in the red zone. Head coach Dan Quinn, he says he's pleased with Steve Sarkisian's play calling in the red zone, but not pleased with the team's execution in the red zone. Well, now that's something that the Falcons have got to fix quickly, and it falls to Sarkisian to get it fixed.
Yeah, I wouldn't be pleased. I think the corner fade call in the red zone is the most overrated, underperforming play in the NFL. We see it time and time again, and it seems to only work about 15 to 20% of the time. Now, when I break the game down from a point spread and a trend standpoint, several people have asked me this week, why is Atlanta favored by 6 points? First off, that's usually a good indicator that Atlanta is the play here. But the main reason the Falcons are favored by six is the last three meetings in Atlanta. The Falcons won all three, and they won all three by 7 points or more. Another stat I'll look at in this matchup is the under is 8-1-1 the last 10 meetings.
In our featured late afternoon game, the Pats and the Jags, we got a rematch of last year's AFC Championship, won 24-20 by the Patriots. Jags feel like they let that one get away, but that's in the past. This is a new season. Both teams get to come into this matchup 1-0. The Jags squeaked by the Giants 20-15. In all accounts, it was an ugly game, but the Jags did what they needed to do to win. One takeaway from the game is that Jacksonville, in my opinion, may be too dependent upon Leonard Fournette. The running back had 41 yards on 9 carries before having to leave the game in the second quarter after he tweaked a hamstring. And then after that, the Jags just never seemed to be able to find a consistent rhythm on offense. T.J. Yeldon, I think he's capable, but he's a different style back from Fournette. Now, Fournette hadn't practiced all week, but in my opinion, he needs to be in the lineup on Sunday for the Jags to have the best opportunity to win.
Yeah, he's a big part of that offense. And, you know, the question's always going to be about the Jaguar offense because the defense is solid. But the questions are going to be about Blake Bortles. Can they score? And as for the defense, I know the Jacksonville defense only allowed 15 points in New York, but they gave up 300-plus yards, and their secondary got beat often. And now Tom Brady comes to town.
In their opener versus the Texans, Brady was 26 of 39, 277 yards, and 3 touchdowns. The man, he's ageless. He doesn't show any outward signs of slowing down. Now, we know the Patriots, we know they aren't a one-man show, and Belichick's proven time and time again that he can plug and play at almost any position. But you have to really like New England's chances whenever number 12 takes the field.
Oh, yeah, sure. And look, that's why the Patriots have won the AFC East Division 9 straight years, 14 of the last 15 years. And, Coach, the 1 year they did not win the division, Brady tore his ACL, and they still won 11 games. They can win without Tom Brady. I don't think Green Bay can win without Aaron Rodgers. But Tom Brady, arguably the GOAT. Trends in this game. Pats. Coach, when they go on the road the last 17 times, they've covered 14. And remember, they covered 14 of those 17 road games against inflated lines. This game's a tough one for me because 60% of the wagers are on the Patriots, but the line has gone down from the Patriots favored 2.5 to favored only by 1. So that's what we call a reverse line move. The point spread tells me the Jags win, but I don't like going against the best covering team in the league.
Let's move on to the Sunday night game. Much like in our college segment, we talked about USC and Texas, and just by the marquee, it looks like it would be a great matchup. This game pretty much the same way. We've got the Giants and the Cowboys, but both these teams, they come in at 0-1 and with really unimpressive losses, to be quite frank with you. And unless these two offenses, unless they rebound from last week's dismal performances, this game is going to be the equivalent of watching paint dry. Now, frankly, the Giants, they have the skill positions covered. Saquon Barkley, I thought he looked great in his first pro game, 18 attempts and 106 yards, had a touchdown. Eli Manning, Odell Beckham Jr., no problems with them. The Giants' problem is their offensive line. Now, that's been their Achilles heel for some time now, and it continues to hurt them. And until New York gets that fixed, all the skill talent in the world won't matter.
Yeah, I agree. Beckham had 15 catches in week one. Eli was solid, minus the one pick. And they still came up on the losing end at home. Cowboys offense looked anemic in Carolina. They only gained 232 total yards. I think Zeke was held to 69 rushing yards, one of his lowest outputs of his career. In my opinion, Dallas has one of the worst receiving corps in the league, one of the bottom three receiving groups in the entire league. And even with that said, I think they're better off without Dez Bryant because he was a toxic force both on and off the field.
That's what I hear, and I don't think that there are a lot of people in Dallas missing Dez Bryant's personality. They miss his talent, but they don't miss his personality. This is going to sound a little bit of a broken record talking about offensive lines, but, you know, the Cowboys only scored 8 versus the Panthers, and I know they missed Dez Bryant. I know they missed Jason Witten, and I know the Panthers have a more than adequate defense. In fact, I thought they looked dominant Sunday. They got 6 sacks, but this falls with Jason Garrett. And, yes, their offensive line is really not performing like they need to be, but Jason Garrett needs to find a way for Prescott to prosper with the talent that he does have there. It seems to me that Dallas was dialing up plays for last year's roster, and that's not going to work. This team's fortune, they're going to revolve around Prescott and Zeke Elliott. And they're not only the future of this franchise, they're the present of this franchise. And if Dallas can't find an identity offensively, and I know this is very early in the season, but if they can't find an identity quickly, I think Jason Garrett may be out of a job come the end of the season.
If they do not make the postseason, I agree, and I think Jones will fire him. Now, Jones has shown more patience with Garrett than any other player or coach I can recall. So I believe you're right there. Trends in this game, Cowboys opened -3.5. The public bet the Giants. Giants are a public team. Dallas is a public team at the window. So the line's 3. I agree with the public here. I'm going to take the 3 and hope that the Giants can run the ball, because they ran the ball pretty well. They didn't protect Eli that great, but they ran the ball well against that front 7 of Jacksonville.
Let's move on to the Monday night game. You've got the Seattle Seahawks taking on the Bears, ESPN, 8:15 p.m. kick. Another pair of 0-1 teams. But both of these teams lost fourth quarter leads last week in their openers. Seahawks, they were up 24-20 before losing 27-24 to the Broncos. The Bears led 20-0 at one point and was up 23-17 after Cody Parkey's 32-yard field goal with 2:39 left in the game. However, Aaron Rodgers came back, hit Randall Cobb with a 75-yard TD strike to give the Pack the win.
The Bears played great. They played well. They had the game in hand until A-Rod came back in the game. And if anyone has any doubt about who the best quarterback is after Sunday night, well, I don't know what they need to see. They just don't get it. That loss has to be tough for the Bears. But I saw a different Bears team Sunday night, very much improved.
Khalil Mack, he's made an immediate impact on the Bears' defense, had the interception return for a touchdown. He grabbed a fumble, and he only had 3 tackles, but mainly because the Packers stayed away from him as much as possible. I think he's going to be a difference maker for Chicago as the season progresses. And had the secondary played as well as the front 7, the Bears would be 1-0 right now. Seattle seems to have lost a little bit of their mojo, but maybe that mojo only works at home and not on the road. Russell Wilson threw for almost 300 yards, but he had a couple of picks, and the Seahawks' leading rusher, Chris Carson, only had 51 yards, albeit on 7 carries. But I think we're kind of getting to a repetitive theme here about some of these teams with great skill position players, but no offensive production, and it comes back to an offensive line that's just not there.
Yeah, in Seattle, it's the same storylines as 2017. No run game. The Legion of Boom is scaled down a notch or two, and the offensive line does not protect their quarterback. Coach, what could Russell Wilson do if he didn't have to run for his life every play?
Yeah, he's more than capable, but much like we saw with Zach Prescott and the Cowboys at Carolina, no matter how capable your quarterback is, you got to have somebody up front that who can block for you. Now, on the Chicago side, I like how Mitchell Trubisky is growing into his role. Not a great quarterback rating last week, and he held the ball too long a few times, but he did what he needed to do to win the game. No excuse for that defense giving up a 20-point lead. And, yeah, I know the fumble at the end of the game was a result of some great prevent coverage and Trubisky holding the ball too long. And I will admit he's got to learn to throw that somewhere in that situation and hope for a penalty. Let's remember, he's still young. This was only his 13th start. And I like the way that Matt Nagy has thrown him into the deep end and told him to swim. I think that's going to pay dividends for the Bears down the road.
Sure. And I had Deshaun Watson rated higher than Trubisky coming out of college in last year's draft, but I see both of them being NFL starting quarterbacks as long as they stay healthy. As far as that game last week, let's not forget that the Bears defensive back had that interception slip right through his hands, and if he makes that catch, it would have essentially ended the game and changed the entire storyline.
As coaches, we always used to say, one play doesn't lose or win the game. Well, frankly, that's just coach speak, okay? That's all that is. And since I'm no longer coaching in the game right now, I'll say it. sometimes the outcome of one play does win or lose the game. Now, if I ever go back into coaching, it's safe money. I'll revert back to coach speak. But right now, I can be honest, okay? Now, speaking of safe money, Mike, what are the numbers tell us about this game with the Hawks and the Bears?
Okay, well, when I look into the numbers, despite the troubles with the offensive line and the fact that Seattle lacks a run game, they've been a very good road team. They've won 5 of their last 7 road games. Of course, they lost last week. But against the point spread, they're 4-1-2. So 4 wins, 1 loss, and 2 pushes their last 7 road trips. The Bears, their last 10 home games, they only have 3 wins. But Chicago, in this game, is favored by 3 or 3.5. I'm going to look at the total of this game. 8 of the last 9 meetings have gone over, but these teams don't play very often. In fact, they've only met once since 2012. I'm going to go against the trend here. I'm going to go with under.
All right, Mike, we appreciate your time this Friday morning going over some key college games for Saturday and also NFL games for Sunday and then, of course, the Monday night game. You're going to be available to come back with us on Monday morning on the Monday Morning Blitz and recap some of these games?
I'll get up early and be ready for the Blitz.
All right, that sounds great. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have Yogi Roth talking a little Pac-12 football right here on GameDaySportsRadio.com.